A couple of weeks ago, I received an email from one of our listeners asking us to do something on a DVD or a film that he has seen. It's called Out of the Blue. We were able to do some background checking, and we were able to contact the executive producer for Quick Fox Productions, James Fox, and we invited him to join us here on the show to talk about Out of the Blue as well as the UFO phenomenon. He accepted, and joining me now is the executive producer of Quick Fox Productions, James Fox. James, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me, James, how did you get interested in ufology?
Well, you know, my father, Charles Fox, is a mainstream journalist for years, and he was stricken with multiple sclerosis, and so I traveled around. I was sort of his legs for a number of years with different magazines, and I would have never dreamed to have become involved with such a controversial subject matter. Of course, I had the quintessential response to UFOs that I think most other people had. Was my immediate response was dismissal and laughter, you know. And of course, I had a sighting, and I came home all excited. I was with five friends, and I got some of it on videotape. I was out in the desert.
Oh, really?
And I shared it with my family and friends, and everyone laughed at me, including my family.
So
I thought, well,
nice.
God, if they don't believe me, who's going to believe me, you know? So I started researching it, and, 10 years later, I produced two films on the subject matter. One was sold to Discovery Channel, and the second film, Out of the Blue, was sold to Universal, which was broadcast on Sci-Fi. Here we are.
Tell us a little bit about your sighting.
Well, I was 120 miles northwest of Las Vegas on Highway 375, the infamous, it was just labeled the extraterrestrial highway by the governor of Nevada, I think. I'm just trying to remember when that was done. It must have been the late 90s, I think. But in any case, a friend of mine noticed something, very unusual light in the sky, and mentioned something. Of course, I didn't really respond, and he said, no, serious, look at that light off to the right. And we saw this pinpoint of light, so it was sort of dancing in the night sky. And what was so amazing, I pulled the car over immediately, but we were all sort of enthralled. I mean, we were just blown away by what we were looking at. And it just could change direction so rapidly. It could sort of reappear in the night sky, and then it got a lot bigger. I guess it got about the size of the moon. It's difficult to tell exactly how far away it was, and it didn't make a sound. I had the video footage actually later analyzed. And you can hear the pitter-patter of sort of drizzle raindrops on the hood of the car, but you couldn't hear this thing at all.
Really?
And it would just sort of very rapidly change direction. And that was what was disconcerting. And it lasted probably 3-4 minutes. And that was it.
Now, since that sighting, have you had any other encounters of a third, fourth, or fifth kind?
No, I have not.
No way. No. Where do you
I've spoken to a lot of people, a lot of military people who have.
Yeah.
I traveled all around the world, actually. Have you seen the film?
No, I haven't.
Oh, gosh, I should have sent you a copy of it.
We asked.
Did you? Well, I was under the impression that one wanted to sort of find out some more information on the film, or perhaps someone had seen it, you had seen it and wanted to get me on the show.
Actually, like I was saying during the intro, one of our listeners did, and he said, you've got to get this guy, you've got to get these people on your show. It's a fantastic film.
We set out basically, the whole issue of the UFO phenomenon is that I thought, there's enough very, very solid data out there. It's just it's the delivery of a lot of the material, the previous films that I had seen that fell really far short of production value and credibility. So we focused primarily on, I'd be the first person to say that 98% of all UFO-related material can be explained away in sort of down-to-earth, prosaic terms. But having said that, there's a core of 2 to 3% that cannot. And that's what we focused on in Out of the Blue, and we talked to high-ranking military officials, like I was saying, from around the world. And that really, we kind of broke through a little bit. We got Peter Coyote to narrate the film.
Yep.
Remember, he was the police officer, I think it was, in E.T.?
That's right.
And, we got a very brief phone interview with President Gerald Ford.
All right, hold on. We've got to take a commercial break. Let me see. James Fox is our special guest. He's the executive producer of Out of the Blue, the definitive investigation of the UFO phenomenon. James Fox is with us. He's the executive producer of Quick Fox Productions, and they're the people who did Out of the Blue, the definitive investigation of the UFO phenomenon. And if you'd like to find out more information, if you'd like to order it, you can visit their website at www.outoftheblue.tv. James, how long did it take you to put the film together?
I had initially spent the first year and a half documenting. I went to Russia, and I went to France, England, and a number of places in the States. And after the first year and a half, I had a lot of documented, I had a lot of interviews. I had another gentleman, co-executive producer, Tim Coleman. He became involved probably about a year and a half to 2 years in. And then we spent an additional 3 to 3.5 years in production. So 5 years in total.
What was your most compelling part of the film that you know, you look back after you did the entire editing and you sat back and you reviewed the final edit master and you said, that's what's going to make them believers?
That's an interesting question. I've been asked that question once or twice before, and I would have to say it's the accumulation of evidence. I mean, cumulative evidence, but probably, God, it's difficult for me to be unbiased because I've actually sat with a lot of these military guys, but I would probably have to say Philip J. Corso.
Oh, yeah.
He's the head of the Foreign Technology Desk at the Pentagon during the Eisenhower administration, and he sat with me, and the cameras were not rolling. And he had his grandchildren there, and he's holding his grandchildren's hands, and he said, you know, this is why I'm coming out. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. And our future generations have to know the truth. And I just thought, you know, why would this guy say this? Why would he do this? You know, why would he lie to his family and his grandchildren? And there's no cameras rolling. He's not getting paid any money. I mean, you know, to me, it was a very pivotal point in the production of the film, let's put it that way. So I'd have to say probably he touches on the Roswell case. And I know the Roswell case, everyone says, has been done to death, but it really has not been resolved. And there's a colossal amount of evidence out there to suggest that whatever it was not a weather balloon, nor was it from this planet.
What do you think Roswell's all about?
Well, you know, just look at the facts. I mean, you know, you got the highest-ranking military officials in the world at the time, exclusively responsible for the deployment of atomic weapons, the 509th. And for them to initially publicly announce the fact that they've recovered one of these flying saucers that everyone's been seeing in the skies, I mean, there's a rash of UFO sightings from coast to coast, all around the United States. Anyone goes to go to the archives, the newspapers, you can see making the headlines, I mean, during that whole like 3 months prior to the event. You know, announcing the recovery, the crash and the recovery of a flying saucer. I mean, that's a fact, and they did that. You know, of course, they recanted less than 24 hours later. But most of the people that initially put that story out later on in life said, look, you know, we were told to do that. It was not from this earth. So you kind of have to listen to the testimony of the people that were there. You know, don't listen to what the military says now, but the people that were there at the time and that actually killed the story.
But, you know, there's two sides to that story, because you've had members of the military who were there who were saying, look, we know it was a weather balloon. It had nothing to do with little green men. So you've got those who were there pro and con as well.
Yeah, you do. But, there's it started in the 50s. It's pretty well documented. They have it's called disinformation. I'm sure we're all aware of that.
Sure, yeah.
Muddy in the waters, you know. Mm-hmm. You have some... you know, you have some people that come out and for whatever reason, and of course they get discredited on one side, and then you have people come out and say they were there and talk about a weather balloon on the other side.
Yeah.
But pretty much the people that were directly involved with it, you know, Major Jesse Marcel, Colonel DeBose, General Roger Ramey, those people that were in the press release, the police people that actually killed the story at the time, listen to their testimony. It says something else.
All right, stand by, James. James Fox is with us. I don't know where my mind is tonight. I said we're going for a network news break, and I'm only one break off. I'm sorry about that, folks. Sorry about that, James.
Oh, no problem.
One thing
I want to mention quickly before I forget.
Sure.
The DVD has just been released on Amazon.com, and it's much less expensive buying it directly from Amazon. I just had to tell people that. I don't know why, but they put it for less than it was on our website. So I just want to let everybody know that if they do want to purchase a copy, I would recommend getting it from the Amazon site. But they can download clips, and they can view the film and see lots of information about the film at outoftheblue.tv.
All right, so we'll direct everybody who wants to buy it to Amazon.com. All right, when we're talking about Roswell, one question that I'd like to ask you, maybe you can answer this. Why did Roswell happen, then die, and only pick up when Stanton Friedman started flogging it?
My understanding is that they're pretty effective at intimidation, I'm assuming. I mean, from testimonies I heard, I've been out to Mexico, and I've spoken to a number of people that were in one way or another involved with the event. And, that's an interesting... It's sort of a resurgence of interest in 79 when, was it Jesse Marcel, Major Jesse Marcel, testified on camera, because he was actually directly responsible or directly involved with the cover-up at the time. So you're asking me why suddenly it came out 30 years after the fact?
Yeah.
I would have to say it probably had to do with Jesse Marcel coming forward.
But if it would have been an actual UFO crash, with all the witnesses that apparently there are, how could they keep the information suppressed for so long? I can't buy the intimidation aspect. I can't buy the men in black aspect. I think that maybe this story was rediscovered as a way of populating in this poor little dying town in New Mexico.
Hey, I'm sure they did capitalize on it, absolutely, as one would expect. But I would have to say probably, I asked that question to Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, and his response was, well, it hasn't been kept secret. It's been leaking out all over the place. And he said it's just been discredited, I mean, think about the UFO subject. And I thought, well, that's an interesting point, actually, because I remember prior to my involvement with the UFO, and I shared this story with my own member, my family, my mother, my father, my sister, and they laughed me out of the room. But why would they not believe? Why would I make something like that up? So I thought, well, God, if it's that difficult to tell my own family to. And then I saw Philip J. Corso, who is the highest-ranking military official in the world to date, who came forward. He had that book out, Roswell, The Day After Roswell, mm-hmm. and Senator Strong Thurmond wrote the foreword to the book. The guy had references. I mean, the guy is the most credible military witness possible. And, someone like him that comes forward, and he had direct... He said he saw the bodies. He knew everything was done at Walter Reed Hospital. He knew where all the debris was kept. He physically handled, And I thought, wow, this is really going to make some progress. But really, it didn't. It sort of came and went,
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it would take. But I'll tell you one thing. I just went to Congress, and actually your listeners can download a clip of me doing it. I went to Congress, and I handed out 435 members of Congress, each copy of this film, accompanied with a letter from the Sci-Fi Channel,
right,
talking about their initiative to get open congressional hearings on this issue.
And how was it accepted by Congress?
They're very receptive behind closed doors. They know a lot of people. I actually did have a conversation with a couple of them. They said, yeah, we're aware that something is going on. We would like to have closed door hearings at some stage, and they were very receptive. Nobody laughed at me. It was amazing. Yeah, I've got clips of it on the website. You can check that out. But I did ask that question to the Apollo astronaut. I think he answered it best. He said, "Well, it really has been kind of leaking out for years," which is true.
All right, stand by, my friend. You and I have got to take the news. Fox is with us, James. Thanks very much for joining us tonight here on the X Zone.
Absolutely.
All right, James, we talked about Roswell. Tell us, Area 51, did you cover Area 51 in your documentary?
My first documentary, 50 Years of Denial, which I sold to Discovery Channel, I did touch on that, but I didn't mention it, Area 51, and Out of the Blue at all, actually. I focused more on the international perspective. I went to Russia,
mm-hmm.
England and France, and then I've touched on Roswell briefly in the film through Philip J. Corso, who's the late Philip Corso.
Right.
We discussed earlier.
All right, let's talk about your first film then, because Area 51 seems to be a point of controversy amongst those in ufology even today, and it's been, like Roswell, found time over again and again. What's your take on Area 51?
I think there have been several aircraft that have been developed in secret out there, SR-71, B-2 stealth bomber, a number of planes over the years, last 50 years, and there's no question in my mind at this point that they are definitely flying something out there that defies physics as we understand it today. There's been enough witnesses that have seen these flights in operation.
Well, we know that for a fact that the F-117 stealth bomber went through its trials before being sent to the first Gulf War at Area 51. Do you think that there's really crashed UFOs and dead aliens at Area 51?
You forced me to speculate on this. One thing I can say is that there seems to be enough evidence to at least suggest...
Okay, that's fair enough.
that they are flying something, saucer-shaped craft that can hover and maneuver rapidly in the night sky, absolutely without making any sound whatsoever, and they can stop on a dime. So and they don't appear to have any wings or tail pieces or jets or anything like that. So there's whether they got that technology from aliens or not, I don't know. But there's enough evidence to suggest that they're definitely flying something out there like that. As a matter of fact, I've seen some pretty impressive footage as well.
When we're talking about the international UFO scene, where is UFO hotspot?
They always seem to take place near nuclear military sites. Like, for instance, Roswell, that was White Sands, New Mexico, the first testing nuclear weapons back in the 40s. Russia had the similar experiences. They have England, Bentwaters, England in 1980. That was housing nuclear weapons. So they seem to have a sort of interest in our nuclear capabilities. And I say our, I mean globally.
When it comes to which country has the most UFO sightings, according to your research, which one would that be?
I would have to say that they all seem to have quite a bit of UFO activity over the last 50, 60 years. I couldn't say one country was more than the other.
Is there one story outside of the U.S. that has really intrigued you?
I would probably have to say England, Bentwaters, England, where a UFO landed on the base. I actually spoke with the colonel at the base at the time, who said they photographed it. They sat with it for 45 minutes, and then it lifted back off and maneuvered away in the night sky. I actually featured the piece in my film. I've got five-star Admiral Lord Hill Norton talking about it and a number of the other witnesses that were there that night. And they basically say, look, we can't say definitively what it is, but we can definitely tell you what it was not. So that was a pretty impressive case, and they've had some cases in Russia as well.
Are there any differences in the sightings around the world? For example, the type of the craft, the description of the craft, whether there are noises emitted by the craft.
The only noises I've heard anyone describe is sort of a slight buzzing or humming sound. I interviewed a Frenchman in this place called Pont-en-Provence, which is in the south of France, and a farmer. He was building a brick well in his backyard, and one landed. It's quite a famous case, actually, in France, in his backyard in broad daylight, probably around 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. Of course, his wife came home after working, and he shared the story with his wife, and she said, honey, you must have had heat stroke and hallucinated in the garden. He said, no, I'm telling you what I saw. And, of course, his neighbors witnessed. I spoke to his neighbors, and and scientists came out and they did analyze the soil where it touched ground, and it affected the soil and the plants in a very unusual way. And there was extensive research done on that particular case, which the French talked about in the piece as well.
How about crop circles? So were crop circles part of your documentary?
They were not. I don't know very much about crop circles other than I did some preliminary research in Salisbury area in England. And I spoke with one farmer in particular, which I thought was, I didn't have a camera rolling or anything, and I just asked him about these crop circles. And he said, he went to refuel his tractor and came back about an hour later, and there was this very elaborate, impression that was the size of several football fields in his field. And the interesting thing about it was, and I think there's a lot of fake, it's the same thing with UFOs, I think there's a lot of fake ones as well, but some of the more difficult ones to explain, the actual blades of grass or whatever grain it is folded over. It's not creased or bent or, do you know what I mean? It's all folded over with such, down to a blade of precision. Very impressive stuff. But I really couldn't say. I haven't done enough research to say one way or the other about the crop circles.
All right, stand by. We've got to take another commercial break here. You and I will be back in 2 minutes. So let our listeners know how they can contact you or visit your website and how they can contact you for where they can get a copy of your DVD.
You're breaking up a little bit there.
I'm sorry. Give our listeners your website.
Oh, it's outoftheblue.tv.
All right, we'll be back in 2 minutes. James, when it comes to talking to the astronauts, what do they say? We talked about Edgar Mitchell, but how about any other astronauts that you talked to?
My piece. The late Gordon Cooper.
Yeah?
He's a Mercury astronaut, Mercury 7. He was testing the precision landing site. Actually, they were filming the testing of a precision landing site for F-86 fighter jets. I think it was in 1952 or 53, and they actually filmed the landing of a flying saucer on the base, and then he describes how it picked back up and shot off at a high rate of speed, and then they processed the film, and the film, like I said, was developed, and it came out, and a courier jet from Washington flew out and picked the film up, and it was never seen or heard from again. But he talks about that, and then he had some sightings, I think a couple years later, while he was flying, and he describes those as well. So he was a firm believer. He said, "Well, I was involved with some of the most highly top secret craft at the time, and it was nothing, nothing even. It was millions of years, light years ahead of what we had." So,
how about the lunar conspiracy, where some of the astronauts have been questioned by different members of the broadcast media about whether, the U.S. ever landed on the moon. Did they ever allude to any of the lunar conspiracy talk when you talked to them about UFOs?
Yeah. I recently attended, it was the 100-year flight, anniversary of flight, and Buzz Aldrin was there, and mm-hmm. Neil Armstrong was there. There a number of Apollo astronauts. Most of the Apollo astronauts that were still alive were there, and I brought that up reluctantly, and they were very disappointed in that. There was a Fox special that came out about the fact we never went to the moon, and they said for years they were always looked at as heroes, icons, American icons, and that some children had come up to them and called them phonies, and they were very hurt by the whole thing, and I'm absolutely convinced that they did go to the moon. I mean, the only thing they ever said to me that might have been interpreted as a hoax was some of the photographs were doctored to improve their appearance, and that might have been interpreted as sort of dismissing the whole event as a hoax.
What convinces you that they actually went to the moon?
Just talking with them, I would have to say. Just spending time with them, talking to them about their experience. I talked to Edgar Mitchell about, he described in vivid detail landing on the surface of the moon, looking back at the planet, the epiphany he had on the way back from the moon. Talking with the people that were involved with the space program, I don't know. I have a hard time believing. You have to remember, there's not one single astronaut ever to come out and say that it was. I mean, it's all speculation. There's not been one astronaut to come out and say we did not go to the moon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they haven't come out and said it, but when you look at some of the scientific evidence, like the Van Allen belts, the fact that there were no burn craters under the landing vehicles, the photographs, we know that a number of them have been airbrushed to enhance them. You know, a lot of questions that just don't add up. You know, for example, another one is the fact that that they used a black and white camera outside the LEM, yet inside the LEM they used a colored camera. You know, there's a lot of questions that they refuse to answer when it comes to any questions on the lunar conspiracy.
Didn't they broadcast all the stuff that was shot on the outside of the directly transmit that directly back to NASA?
It was, yes, and the networks picked it up off of a NASA feed. So
right.
it was second or third generation.
Well, I couldn't explain it. I mean, I have sat down with a number of Apollo astronauts, and I've seen the films, by the way. I mean, I was open to the evidence because I never like to shut things down entirely. You know what I mean? It's not, don't bother with the evidence. My mind's made up. I hate that philosophy, but I did not see enough evidence to dismiss the lunar landing personally.
All right. How about some of the other talk where the lunar the astronauts may have seen UFOs in orbits or seen UFOs on their way to the moon? Did they ever talk about the UFOs that they saw in orbit? I mean, besides Cooper or Edgar Mitchell.
Yes, I've done extensive research on this actually, and I came very close to reluctant to talk too much in detail about this, but I've heard directly from a few astronauts that there was something rather ambiguous that followed Apollo 11 to the moon, and then Apollo 15 had a similar experience, but it was rather ambiguous.
Hmm.
And that the explanation given to them was not what they saw. That's about the extent I've gotten out of them at this point. One of them would be willing to come forward, provided I get cooperative testimony from another Apollo mission. And I have not yet managed to secure that, but I do have. But it's sort of inconclusive.
But you're still working on it.
Yeah, I am still working on it. Yeah, I am. Yeah. But like I said, it's somewhat ambiguous. You know, it's worth pursuing, but it is ambiguous.
Tell me, do you think that the U.S. government is part of a conspiracy to cover up the UFO problem or the UFO phenomenon?
Yeah, but it's not. It's much more complicated than just saying the U.S. government. I mean, if you see, I'll send you a copy of Out of the Blue. You might want to have a follow-up interview with me about this.
Oh, we definitely will. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's much more complex than just the U.S. government. It's sort of a quasi-military, quasi-government group that was formed in the late '40s under the National Security Act, which makes them exempt from any sort of oversight from Congress or anybody else. The creation of that organization seemed to escape oversight today. There's a lot of things that are going on that even the president doesn't appear to have access to. And I make that argument in Out of the Blue quite well, actually. So, yes, do I think there's a concerted effort to suppress this evidence and to sort of obfuscate the whole issue? Yes, I do. Could I pinpoint exactly what... part of the government or the military that's doing it? No, I can't.
All right, stand by. James Fox is our special guest. James, when it comes to the sightings reported by two presidents, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter, do you believe that these two accounts actually give credibility to the UFO reports that other people are making, or is this just another couple of presidents who want to make a little mark in another part of history?
You know, people are extremely reluctant to come forward and discuss UFOs in general, especially high-ranking military officials and presidents. I mean, I really had to work at Ford. I mean, basically what Ford did, there was a major sighting. Are you familiar with the sighting that happened over the state of Arizona in 97?
Sure, the Phoenix Lights.
Phoenix Lights case, yeah. There was a similar event that happened over the state of Michigan in 1966, I believe it was. And Ford was congressman at the time, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the explanation given by the Air Force was so ridiculous that he came forward with a number of other people and said, look, you know, the general public deserves a better explanation than what was given, and was instrumental in launching congressional hearings. And he just validated that whole event for me on the phone, that he did help launch an investigation into it, which ended up with full-blown congressional hearings. Carter had a sighting, and I got him in a book signing at Stacy's bookstore in San Francisco, actually, and he just admitted that, yes, he did see he did have a UFO sighting, and then he did make inquiries during his presidency.
Wow. Do you think there's other presidents who have seen UFOs or other high-ranking public officials who just would rather keep quiet than to go on record? And
definitely.
If so, why?
Think about how the response my family gave me. Think about, you know, their constituents or their, you know what I mean? If you had a UFO sighting and you'd shared it with your family, they'd probably laugh at you. You can imagine how people that don't know you would respond. It's not very good. It's not a credibility builder, if you know what I mean.
Actually, the people who don't know you believe you.
Well, you know, I had a real difficult time with it, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't even share my story anymore. You know, I let the evidence speak for itself in the film. But one thing I wanted to mention, this is the first film that was actually been publicly endorsed by Michael Shermer, who's the publisher of Skeptic Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Out of the Blue emerges as one of the very best films ever produced on this, one of the most interesting subjects in the history of science, which is a very big step for Skeptic Magazine.
All right, stand by. James Fox is our special guest. He is the executive producer of Out of the Blue. And if you'd like more information on James and the film or the DVD, visit www.outoftheblue.tv. It is available on Amazon.com. James, I have to ask you this question now. What did you think about the ABC Peter Jennings special on UFOs?
Well, they actually used some clips from my film. And as a reference all the way through, I would have liked to have been more involved with that production. But Peter Jennings did say that he felt that there was something to the phenomenon, that he believed in UFOs, they just didn't know who was flying them. They based that on some testimony that from a number of military witnesses that he'd spoken with.
Where do you think these UFOs are coming from?
I couldn't tell you. I've speculated a number of times, and yeah. I've got my own personal theories. Interdimensional, interplanetary. I couldn't tell you.
Why do you think they're coming here to this planet?
Once again, you're forcing me to speculate. I just couldn't respond. I don't know. I really don't know.
Why don't you think they just don't land in front of Atlanta, Georgia, smack dab in front of the home of CNN, get it over with, get rid of the speculation, and say, we're here?
Well, perhaps they don't want their presence known.
Then why do they fly around at night with these little lights going on? That certainly attracts attention.
Yeah, they've done some of the event that happened in 97 over Phoenix, Arizona was pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a response to that question. I just don't know. I really don't know, you know.
How about the Mexican UFOs? Did your documentary cover any of those?
A couple of sightings in Mexico, yes. Yes. Just the same as pretty much most other countries. They've witnessed these a very elusive craft that can fly rings around our fastest jets and make no sound and no visible means of propulsion, just like pretty much anywhere else in the world.
Now, during any of the your documentary or any other documentary that's done on UFOs where you get all these so-called expert witnesses, have they ever been subjected to lie detector tests? Have they ever sat down and undergone a psychological stress evaluation test to see if they're lying or they're telling the truth? Or do we just take their word at value, face value?
Snowflake, Arizona. Do you remember that case that happened? They made a movie called Fire in the Sky.
Sure, with Travis Walton.
Yeah, there were six witnesses.
Yeah.
They all took lie detector tests and all passed.
Yeah, but I mean, what about these guys like who are in the military and the astronauts, Edgar Mitchell, and we can't do it on Cooper anymore, but how about these guys? You know, they're not infallible. They're not gods.
No, they're definitely not, but you have to understand they are trained to know what takes place in our airspace.
But they're also paid by the government, which is supposed to be part of this great conspiracy, so they may be trained to lie as well.
Anything's possible, but they did. There was an event that happened at the National Press Club in 2001, mm-hmm. which I also feature in Out of the Blue, where they're making a call out to Congress. They'd like to testify under congressional immunity under oath. And they're making a plea to Congress to do that. And they make it very, very clear at the National Press Club in 2001.
All right, stand by. We have to take another commercial break. Studio. James, one of our listeners want to know what your take is on alien abductions.
Well, the late John Mack would have been the person to ask that question to. But I'd have to refer to the Snowflake, Arizona case. That, to me, seems a very compelling case. We have a number of eyewitness accounts, testimony, and, of course, Travis Walton, who disappears for, at least 3 to 5 days to come back with this crazy story of being abducted. And that seems to be that and the Betty and Barney Hill case seem to be two very solid cases that would indicate that such events have taken place.
How about cattle mutilation? What's your opinion or your take on that?
Linda Moulton Howe is a specialist on that, but I've seen some evidence to suggest something very unusual is taking place. The extraction it's so bizarre, you know. The extraction of different parts of the cow done with such laser-like precision in the middle of a field, very bizarre.
Why do you think whoever is doing it on bovines? You know, do you think that these are the little green men that are coming down and zapping our cattle?
Pretty crazy theory, isn't it? I couldn't say. I'm sorry. I'm not one to generally speculate about something I don't know. You know.
Everybody does. You know, like,
place. I mean, Linda Moulton Howe wouldn't have dedicated 20, 30 years of her life to something that there was nothing to.
Why not? A lot of people dedicate their lives to useless causes. You know, why is she so different?
But, you know, I'm sorry. I just couldn't. I haven't done enough research on those two.
What's your gut feeling?
What I've done basically is I've skimmed the surface. I felt there's no reason for me to preach to the choir, to assemble enough solid data is to establish the fact that something very unusual is taking place in our airspace, and that I wanted to establish that fact before going into more detail as to who they might be, where they're coming from, and why they're here.
All right, so do you believe that you've established that fact?
Absolutely. No question about it. There's not been one person that's seen out of the blue and said there's nothing to it. Not one single person who's seen it, including Skeptic Magazine. His job is to debunk the paranormal.
I've known Mike for a number of years, and he goes both sides of the road.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But he saw this film, and he said, wow, this is pretty impressive stuff.
Now, did you give it to the guys at PsyCop?
PsyCop?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Should I?
Oh, no.
We should do that.
There you go.
I can send you a couple of copies.
I'll be glad to get it to them. Dr. Joe Nichols, a personal friend, and I will make sure that he gets a copy.
I'll send you as many copies as you need. You know, the reason being, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, you had sent me an email asking for to go on radio, I think, before the night of the Peter Jennings special, and I got it a day or so afterwards, and I realized the information at that point was...
Then we rescheduled it, yeah.
So that's why I didn't send it, unfortunately, but I would have done so, and I will do so.
All right.
I'll send you a number of copies, and perhaps we can do a follow-up.
That'll be great. We'll get some pro, we'll get some con, and we'll let the listeners decide.
But you're going to have to put your seatbelt on before you watch this film.
Well, I don't drive watching TV anymore.
140-something minutes, sizzling minutes. A real roller coaster of a ride.
I knew a girl like that once.
It's, like I said, it's very, very compelling. And I don't just say that because I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but we put together a very, very solid case.
All right, stand by. We've got to put... James, I have an email from one of our listeners who'd like to know which part of the Peter Jennings specials were actually were clips from you.
A couple of the UFOs featured in there at the beginning. There was a shot over Mexico City.
Yeah, why did they use those Mexican shots if it had nothing to do with outside the U.S.?
No, it's really funny because they used, there was a number of actual footage that I've got, and out of the blue, and then I suggested it would be far more appropriate, and they said, well, that's, our producers feel this way, and that's what they want, so it doesn't make any sense because, you know, you're dealing with Mexico City, and there's a case that happened right here in the States and one in England, and they chose to do what they chose to do, and I don't know why. And,
I thought that was pretty stupid, personally.
Yeah, and they were covering some cases, and they didn't have enough. I mean, you know, they touched on Roswell, and I have an interview with, like I said, with the late Philip J. Corso,
right,
one of the highest-ranking officials, who, you know, had firsthand experience with Roswell, and the fact that they didn't want to use him was shocking to me. And I offered that footage actually free of charge just to have in the piece.
You know, plus the fact that they didn't use they didn't make any reference to Betty and Barney Hill. They never made any reference to the historical UFOs that appear throughout history, in you know, even into the North American Indian mythology. There was so much left that they could have done. It was just, I'll tell you something. Out of ten flying saucers, I gave it a minus six.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you on that. I was very disappointed. I mean, it wasn't a hatchet job, but at the same time, they fell very short of anything really compelling. And then they had done extensive research on the whole Condon report, which was the result of the congressional hearings, which Gerald Ford had something to do with.
Mm-hmm.
And they scrapped that at the last minute. They spent 5 months putting something together on the Condon, which is a very, very impressive story. And they scrapped that, and they did more research on the Bentwaters England case, which I feature in Out of the Blue,
yes,
and then they scrapped that as well. So, you know, and very flimsy evidence for Roswell. Very flimsy. I wasn't very impressed.
Dr. Lynn Kitai, who's been on the show a couple of times, apparently they talked to her about the Phoenix Lights. They dropped her on the editing table. Dr. John Mack, he was part of it. They scrapped him at the last minute.
Wow. So they must have obviously interviewed him before his accident.
Yes. You know, but it still would have given a lot of credibility because everyone who's in this industry knows Dr. John Mack.
Mm-hmm.
I was part of a BBC special in 97 that featured the show, and he was part of it. And, you know, this guy was just fantastic.
Yeah. You know, there was a Congressman Stephen Schiff, the late Congressman Stephen Schiff, who was bothered enough by his constituents to launch an investigation into Roswell in 97. And there was a lot of attention on Roswell for the 50-year anniversary. And, you know, he finally came forward and said, my God, you know, this is all the ingredients to a cover-up. You know, the evidence points to the fact that whatever it was that crashed there was not what they are saying it was. You know, Project Mogul, I think it was.
Right.
And he was going to launch full-blown congressional hearings, and then suddenly you probably know the story.
All right, stand by, Mark. James, during your investigation into UFOs, not only in the U.S. and around the world, did anybody mention Men in Black?
One time. And it was to do with the Phoenix Lights case.
Really?
Frances Barwood. I feature her in the documentary.
I've had her on the show?
Yeah, she's in the film.
Mm-hmm.
She claims, I'm trying to remember what her official position was at the time. She was in politics, and I'm sorry to not know her exact position. But basically, someone had telephoned her office claiming to have some video footage of the craft flying directly overhead.
Mm-hmm.
And they had made arrangements for the footage to be sent to her from him. And she never received the footage.
Really?
So he called a couple weeks later. He said, well, what did you think of the footage that I sent? And she said, well, I never received it. And he said, well, that's funny, because two men,
mm-hmm.
very intimidating men, came by my house and said that they were from your office and they were here to pick up the footage. And he said, I was relieved to know that's all they wanted. This is what they claim. This is what she told me. Of course, I didn't feature it in the film because it was not enough. It was inconclusive. But
right.
That was the only case I heard about.
Now, she was candidate for the Arizona Secretary of State.
Yes,
yeah.
You got it. Yep.
And, you know, she's been on the show a couple of times, and she's right into the UFO scene. She really believes in it.
Yeah, you should actually, if you ever have her on again, you should ask her about that particular case.
I will.
Because, I didn't pursue it. But apparently she had pursued it and spoke to the neighbors, and they did see a very conspicuous-looking car pull up, and two men in suits come out and pay a visit to the neighbor. That there was, it was very unusual.
Well, if she was running for an elected official elected official in the state of Arizona, she would be under scrutiny by the investigative powers. So that's not very surprising.
Do you think if there was any conclusive evidence that would prove, you know, what happened? I'm just thinking of the name of the governor at the time who came on and basically said they're going to launch an investigation, they're going to get to the bottom of this whole event, and then moments later, a couple of hours later, he was pulled out of a court appearance that he had to sort of dismiss the entire thing and made a joke out of the whole event. Governor Fife Symington. Do you remember that?
Nope.
Oh, anyway, Governor, I show it in the piece Out of the Blue. You know, you see him early in the day saying, you know, there's a lot of evidence and that they wanted to launch an investigation.
He have somebody come in a press conference dressed up as an alien?
You got it.
Yes.
And that really pissed off a lot of the eyewitnesses, that's for sure. But I would imagine anywhere, if there was very substantial evidence, that they would do what they could to sort of suppress that, if there indeed is a cover-up.
Okay, when it comes to international cases, did you people do anything with the Billy Meier case?
I did not.
No way.
No, just because it was later proved that a lot of the photographs that were, that he used were hoaxed.
Really?
Yeah. So I didn't want to touch it.
How were they proved to be hoaxed?
It just looked like he was sort of suspending things from a fishing line.
But was
there
ever...
seemed to be some sort of bona fide events that occurred, and then the sightings just sort of no longer occurred. And he was under, this is what I've heard anyway, that he was under all this pressure to produce,
mm-hmm.
and so they did. And there were a number of his cases that were dismissed.
But did you ever actually dismiss any of them yourself, seeing the doing any digital analysis or anything?
People that I trusted had done that, and that's what they told me.
Hmm.
So I didn't. I did not feature any of his photographs or any of. I did not.
Okay. How about the Nazca lines? If you were doing the international UFOs, you know, there's a lot of theories about the Nazca lines, since they can only be seen from the sky.
Sorry?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I mean the Nazca lines in Peru. Did you do anything on those?
I did not. No.
Right.
I did spend 50 years of denial, talked about the historical perspective, cave paintings and that sort of thing, but I didn't touch on any of that in Out of the Blue. I sort of focused more on contemporary stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, pretty much mostly military. Mostly military stuff in Out of the Blue. Primarily, because I felt that was the most credible stuff to focus on.
Okay,
there's there's a lot of evidence to suggest that this is a phenomenon that's been taking place for centuries, if not thousands of years.
Okay,
why not? I mean, maybe we're under some sort of observation, surveillance or something, you know?
But is it possible that the entire UFO scene is nothing else but a hoax being perpetrated by those who are disgruntled with the government that they used to work for?
Well, if you talk to eyewitness testimonies, that those that have seen them, that's not even a remote possibility.
All right, James. First of all, welcome back. Thanks very much for being with us here tonight.
No, thanks for inviting me on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Well, one thing I want to mention quickly is going back to the whole cover-up business.
Yeah.
I can imagine your listeners, just for a moment, to think hypothetically here. If there were structured craft of unknown origin that could penetrate very sensitive airspace, it certainly makes sense to me that those in a position of power and control of the military wouldn't want to relinquish that information to the general public for, maybe possible fear of another War of the Worlds episode, you know?
Yes.
So it kind of makes sense to me that if these, objects can fly rings around the fastest jets and can penetrate very sensitive airspace, that the military and certain departments of the government would probably want to keep that under wraps.
You know, if the president of the U.S. Cannot have an affair between the Oval Office and the Oval John in the most secure building in the U.S., how the hell can you hide crashed UFOs and aliens without it being leaked out? It makes no sense.
But you have to think about the question that you're just asking yourself. That it hasn't been hidden. You know about it. I know about it. Most of the people in the United States have heard about Roswell. It's just been ridiculed and debunked.
But there's been no proof either. Where?
There's no proof in either way, but there's been more proof. I can assure you that if the evidence, if we had a court of law and we could probably persuade most jury members, panel, I guess.
But where's the physical evidence?
Well, you could talk about the trace case evidence of landings and photographic and radar, and those are physical. That's physical evidence.
But here we are in a society where everyone has a digital camera. There are more cameras now than at any other point of this planet's history.
Okay, so you shoot a UFO, and you get broad daylight sighting of a flying saucer that I feature in my film Out of the Blue, and I have it analyzed by Lucasfilm, Industrial Light and Magic, and they say that, you know what, this is real bona fide footage of an object that we cannot explain. Then what? Then what happens?
All right, so what I'm saying is that if they were...
What good is it? What good is it? That's what I'm saying.
If there were enough of them, that's one thing. But there are so many hoaxsters now out there.
Well, that's the thing. You know, what good is it? You know, even if it's really good film footage, broad daylight, points of reference, analyzed by, high-tech industrial light and magic, determined to be, authentic footage, and it's still, What has it done?
But authentic footage of what?
Of an unknown flying object.
All right, so that could be something from this, you know, something that's...
It's a flying saucer, I can assure you. That's what it looks like. It looks like, it behaves like, I mean, you know, you'll see the footage in Out of the Blue.
Yeah.
It's about 2 minutes long, and it's analyzed by Lucasfilm. But, you know, what good is it?
All right.
Eyewitness testimony, what good is it?
Okay, how about the dead aliens? How about any of the aliens that are supposed to be here on this planet?
What is it going to take? I mean, remember they buzzed the White House in 52. And there was eye contact, there was radar confirmation, there was photographic evidence. They scrambled military jets. You know, they've testified in front of Congress what they saw. You know, what has it done? What is it going to take for this story to get out?
Maybe the aliens need to land on the White House lawn.
Maybe they need to land on the White House lawn. Why don't they do that? I haven't got the foggiest clue.
Neither do I. That's one of the most perplexing questions of all. If they're here, why do they want to be so evasive?
It would be great to get to the bottom of it. I mean, and that's another question in which I brought up with Edgar Mitchell, and he's one of the few people alive today that has actually traveled to a foreign, you know, body or planet or, I don't even know what you call the moon. It's not a planet. You know, he basically said, look, if I flew to a distant civilization, I don't think that we would just sort of land and make our presence suddenly known. We'd probably observe from a distance and survey what's going on, and perhaps wouldn't want to necessarily interfere. So maybe that's the philosophy behind not establishing blatant contact.
Sounds like the prime director from Star Trek.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes kind of sense, don't you think?
No.
So you just land. You just go to a distant civilization and just make your presence known.
Yeah. Hi, I'm here. I'm from another planet.
The other thing is, we're fairly hostile. I mean, there's been enough evidence to suggest that we take a very hostile position to anything unidentified in our airspace.
Yeah, sure. We send up interceptors with nuclear missiles.
Exactly. So, you know, perhaps we're not sitting there with open arms.
Hell,
but there have been a number of landing cases, just not in very highly populated areas.
Yeah. Right, stand by. We've got to take our final break. James, we've got about a minute and a half. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Do you have anything you'd like to say to our listening audience? I mean, besides telling them to go to Amazon.com and buy your DVD.
Well, I'd like to say this. I'd definitely let the audience know that if they do end up purchasing a copy of Out of the Blue and they're still not convinced that there's something to the UFO phenomena, just to contact me at jamesfox@outoftheblue.tv, and I will gladly refund their money.
Now, that's a pretty convincing thing.
Yeah, well, it has no one's watched it yet that's felt that way, so I stand behind it.
That's great. James, anything coming up for your production company?
We're actually working on alternative energy right now, doing a expose on some of the alternatives that have to oil.
You mean some of the alternatives that have been suppressed?
Theoretically, yes.
Theoretically. You are a cautious man when it comes to talking.
Yes, I am. I like to let the evidence speak for itself. I don't like publicizing. You know what I mean?
You're a weird bird in the yard of broadcasting.
Well, you know, when you deal with the nature of these issues, one has to be cautious in order to be credible.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly my philosophy, anyway.
All right, James, thanks a million for joining us tonight. We look forward to getting those copies and having you back on. We'll get a hold of Dr. Joe Nickel, get him a copy, and have you both on at the same time.
Will you drop me an email?
I certainly will.
Thank you so much.
Nice talking to you, James. Thanks very much for being with us. And let our listeners know how they can visit your website and where they can buy your DVD. Come on.
Outoftheblue.tv, or you can go to Amazon.com and just punch in under DVD, punch in Out of the Blue. It'll be the first one that pops up.
All right, James, take care of yourself. Thanks very much for sharing your time with us here tonight on the X-Zone.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right, careful guy. I wonder if he ever sold aluminum siding. Yep, okay. I asked him a couple of questions, and I said, what would you think? And he says, I don't speculate. Well, isn't thinking asking somebody to speculate? Yeah, that's all I was doing. Anyway, he's going to be sending us some copies. We will get a copy to Dr. Joe Nickel. And I'll ask Joe to come on the air with us to discuss the DVD as well as James at the same time. Like he said, if you don't believe it, he'll send you your money back. I wonder if that applies to me, too. Hey, wait a minute. He's not charging me for it. Oh.